Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football. I'm Killen Kerwin, and coming up on this week's show, I chat with a serial trophy winner, both as a player and a manager, and how he wants to do the same as director of football at Bohemians Football Club. Coming up in the next few weeks, we will be chatting with former Republic of Ireland manager Owen Hand as well, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share it across your social media platforms to support the show. You can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to us on, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music or YouTube Podcasts and more. You can find us there. Now, my guest on this week's show has been a serial winner throughout his career. Where he goes, trophies usually follow. So what is behind his success in the League of Ireland, Northern Ireland and in Scotland too? Well, I'm delighted that Pat Finlan joins us on the show. Pat, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And, you know, I suppose the word legendary gets thrown around quite a lot, but you certainly are what one might call a legend of Irish football. I suppose if you kind of look back on your own career, just to start us off, how would you assess yourself and the I suppose the footballing life that you've had?
I suppose I've been around a long time, all right. I'm not sure about the legendary status, but I've seen a lot of the game. I've been most sides of it now, so I've probably been lucky is the way I describe it, to be honest. I've been very fortunate that I was given a talent that I made the best of, and it took me to some brilliant places, some dark places as well, unfortunately, which is football, but some brilliant opportunities, and obviously to play and work for some great clubs as well. So yeah, I class myself fortunate, I suppose. Doesn't happen to everybody. People play football for a long time and don't have probably success, as much success or enjoyment as they probably deserve. So yeah, probably fortunate and lucky in a lot of ways.
Take us back to the, I suppose, the very beginning. Where do you fall in love with football? Is it a young age?
Yeah, I was a young boy, grew up in Finglas South. My local postman, Jimmy Bourne, seen me playing on the road and brought me down to Talca Rovers. And I played for Talca Rovers under the great Tony O'Connell. Who played for obviously Bowes and Rovers as well, international player, and then ended up going to Home Farm, to Leuart Celtic, and then back to my local club in Finglas, who wouldn't have been at the top level of schoolboy football, Rivermount Boys. I went back there at under 15, I think, 14 or 15, and had a really, really good team at the time, all local, mostly local lads in Finglas. And then I was fortunate enough to play in international friendly under Brian Kerr and Noel O'Reilly down in the Mardyke in Cork against Northern Ireland. Chelsea were at the game and ended up going on trial to Chelsea and signing there. So I suppose that's where my love for the game probably came from. My dad, to be honest, he was a big football person. Big Shamrock Rovers fan. He would have brought me to games as a young boy, and then obviously followed my career as I grew up playing. So yeah, I was also went to a very, very big pro, which was unusual in them days, pro football school in Patrician College in Finglas, where we had some great players as well. So yeah, I suppose really young age, fell in love with the game, I suppose, very, very young. And like I said, it's been good to me ever since.
Absolutely, yeah. And you spend time in Chelsea then for two or three seasons as well. How does that kind of opportunity come about, I suppose, first of all?
Well, like I said, I ended up playing the international under Brian and Noel down in the Mardyke. It was sort of around the time that Jack Charlton came into the setup, and I think Liam too, he had been managing the youth, and Brian sort of took that game. And it went quite well. I scored a couple of goals against Northern Ireland, and like I said, I went on trial to Chelsea with Tony Cousins. We played a game against Spurs. We got beaten 10-1, believe it or not. They told me to go back and ring my dad and get him over that they wanted to sign me. So it doesn't normally happen after getting beaten 10-1, yeah. But it did. And I signed a 3-year contract at Chelsea.
Wow.
So I suppose that's how it happened fairly quickly. I hadn't really been, I'd sort of been released by Home Farm because I was probably too small. Never got an international cap at 15s or 16s. So it was probably a different route to most of the young boys that were going away at that time. Probably played a lot of international football.
What age were you when you made that Chelsea move?
I was 16, nearly 17. So, like I said, I'd never been capped or anything like that. So, but it did come out of blue. I'd been playing quite well for my club. And obviously that game in Cork, Chelsea had someone at the game. So, like I said, I went over and I did quite well when I was over there. And they offered me a 3-year deal.
And what was it like being away from home for being quite young, first of all, and then also playing, I suppose, in one of the biggest cities in Europe as well, in London? That must have been an experience.
Yeah, it was difficult. I have to be honest, I was really a home board as well. Loved where I was in Finglason. So to be, like you say, thrown into the big lights of London at 17. But I was very fortunate. I ended up living in a house in Burnt Oak in Edgware, North London, with a lovely family. Rita and Vincent. Rita was from Killoglan in County Kerry. So I suppose it was second mammy at the time. So it was a brilliant experience from a life learning, I suppose, and growing up very quickly. The football was just okay. I didn't probably do as well as I would have liked. But look, that's, like I said, I was fortunate when I did leave Chelsea that I ended up playing again for Brian Kerr at Pats. So, but it was a brilliant experience. I have to be honest, I wasn't very good in school. Couldn't wait to get out. So, and it's different now, which is great. And most of the young boys that around the clubs that I see, are doing well in school, which is brilliant. But listen, you're going to play for, at the time, Chelsea were nowhere near as big a club as they are now. They just got promoted into the old First Division, back into the old First Division under John Hollins. But it was a brilliant experience, absolutely brilliant experience, with some fabulous players in the first team as well. So even to get an opportunity to be around it, I suppose, was again, I am always learning every day. And that was just a brilliant learning experience that you can take into as a young boy, but you can take it into your career going forward. Mm. So it was great.
You mentioned that you move on then to St. Pat's. And of course, Brian Kerr and that fantastic team. How did that kind of move come about? Were you already moving back from Chelsea, from London, or did he spot you and go, listen, come play?
No, I'd come back home. I went and trained with Rovers, with a really good Rovers team, sort of finishing up at that time. That would have been about 1987, I think it was. And then Brian rang me and asked me to come down and train and played a friendly game in the famous San Siro in the middle of the flats in Ballymun for St. Pat's. and then I signed. It was at that time, sort of, Brian was assembling and I know the lads won't mind me saying this, it was probably a team of rejects and that had been released or probably not being in, me included in that, obviously.
Island of Misfit Toys, was it?
Yeah. Some good players like Curtis Fleming and that coming out of schoolboy football. So, he sort of moulded and gelled a team, like I say, lads that probably didn't do as well as they should have, or maybe weren't playing as much as they would have been or would have liked to play. So, and it was a different time, a different era, obviously. And he built a brilliant, brilliant squad of players. That you talk about overachieving. Well, that squad certainly overachieved in the first year. We got beaten. Well, we drew up in Oriel Park in the last day of the season to lose the league. And then obviously we won it in, I think it was 89, was it, that we went and won it. So yeah, he assembled a brilliant group of players.
And was there a change in between those two seasons? You'd come this close to winning the league title, and then the next year you go that extra bit, the bit more. Was there something that gave you that extra maybe 5 or 10%?
No, I think probably the first year, little bit of inexperience probably caught us in the end. We went to Oriel and really, really good Dundalk team. I think they might have went on and won the double. But they had a really, really good side. A lot of experience in it. We actually went 1-0 up. We scored a penalty early in the game. Desi Gorman equalised. But I think the experience of that run helped us and probably gave us the belief that we could go toe-to-toe with the good sides around that time. Obviously, that Rovers team, Dundalk, Derry had a good side. Bows were strong. So it gave us the belief. Cork, very strong. So it gave us the belief that we could go and win it. Like I said, playing for Brian was, you know, we didn't have a lot at the time, to be honest. We didn't have anything. Training facilities were fairly raw. Equipment was fairly raw, but we had a brilliant group of lads, to be honest, and a great staff, the likes of Brian and Billy Baxter and Sarah Watch, people like that, just really good people around the place. And we had a determination and a drive, I suppose, to go and be successful, and it was really good times, yeah. And I was very young, so I thought this was going to happen every year.
Well, to be fair, you know, if you look back, you did win a lot of trophies. So
yeah,
maybe
it took
you did,
a few more years for that to happen.
But you, what was it like? Because we know and Brian Kerr, the TV pundit and et cetera, but I think people forget that he was a brilliant manager in his own right, managed his country at underage level as well and things like that. So give us a little insight on what it was like to work for Brian and why do you think the players responded to Brian so much to give him that much effort?
I think the big thing I learned from Brian when I went into management then is it's got to be 24/7. And that's difficult because you've everything else going on in your life. But Brian's attention to detail at that time, like I said, we didn't have a training ground. We train in the tarmac over in St. Michael's. I say sometimes we train in the slaughterhouse behind the shed end at Richmond Park. So we didn't have a lot. But what we had was, like I said, we had a good group of players. But Brian's attention to detail back then, you know, I see it now. You know, everything that's in the game is really good. And the managers now have everything at their disposal. But Brian made sure he had that back in the day as well. And his work ethic and his knowledge of the games, that's the key. He just had a real knowledge of the game, how to set up a team tactically, very, 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 very good. But also man management skills. Brian was ruthless as well. Like, he had that about him. You knew you had to perform and you knew, but he's also very loyal. He was just a top, top manager. And obviously he went on to prove that even then he was still very young, but obviously he's gone on and managed his country. So yeah. I think that proves how good he was, but he was a dream to play for. And I've been fortunate that the managers that I've had have been very good. But Brian is probably the one at the top of that, like I said, from where we were, what we had, but his level of detail and how we prepared his team and how we made you feel going out to play. And how he improved as a player. I think as a coach, for me, that's the bit maybe is missing a little bit at the moment. You've got to be able to improve players. And he did that in abundance. Like I said, he took a group of players that were... We have a reunion coming up, so I have to be careful what I say. It's 35 years, so I have to be careful. I wouldn't say misfits, but we were ragtag. Like we were a bit of everything. And to be able to gel that together just shows you how good he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, is it fair to say that winning that league title with St. Pat's that early in your own kind of career, you're still quite young at the time, it kind of set you up, I suppose, as well in terms of, geez, winning titles is great. This is what it takes. This is the dedication that it takes to win titles and to be part of a winning team.
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose I was probably different at the time. I'd grown up being a League of Ireland fan, from going to matches from a very young age. Like I said, my first probably recollection is going to watch Rovers against Finn Harps in a title cup match back in, I don't know, whether 76 maybe. So I sort of had a good knowledge of the league and I knew what it was about. And like I said, you're that young and you're winning a league title that young. It does set you up, but also makes you hungry as well. Like, winning things is, you know, it's a fantastic feeling. It's a brilliant feeling when you get over the line and winning a league title or even winning a cup. So I think it has to be in your DNA or your makeup that when you get that success and it's so good and it feels so good that you want to have plenty more of it. So I suppose, yeah, in that regard, it gave me the drive and determination that I like this and I want a bit more of it.
What happens then for you to move over to the other side then to Bowes?
Well, the Elite Morgan story where, yeah, we were out of Inchicore at the time. We were playing Harold's Cross, and like I said, Brian was sort of loaves and fishes at that stage. He was miracles all over the place, and it's like anything, you have a successful team and some of the bigger clubs or wealthier clubs come looking, then it's that's what happens in football, isn't it? And
the pantry gets
the team
raided.
Broke up then. Yeah, the team broke up. I ended up going to Bowes. Eamon Gregg, who would have been part of Brian's squad at when I first signed for Pat's, Eamon would have been there again, another Irish international. He would have been a really, really good player. And Eamon got the job at Bowes. Murray Price would have been at Pat's as well at that time. And Murray was gone in with him. So Eamon rang me and asked me would I sign for Bowes. They did offer me more money, so I can't be telling lies. I met Brian 3 or 4 times, and they were very, very difficult meetings. He didn't speak to me for a long time after I left. But look, it was at that time, I think 2 or 3 or 4 of the lads went to Rovers, 2 or 3 went to Bowes. So the team had broke up. And it was a difficult decision to leave because, like I said, he'd been very good to me. But the Lord applying for Bowes and what Eamon was offering was something that I liked what I heard. So that's the reason I went and signed for Bowes.
And you go to Bowes and you win an FAI Cup in your first season there. Am I right in saying that? As well, and you were kind of a really important part of that too. So again, you're leaving a successful team. You come in and you taste this kind of success almost immediately. On top of that, as well with the cup, winning a cup is sometimes a little bit different than winning a league, because league takes much more. It's a marathon. So did you believe that springboard was there then to move on with this team to do that?
Absolutely. I mean, we probably overachieved in that first year. Eamon was building a team. We got to a cup final. We got an easy run to it, but we got a decent run that was doable. We came up against a really good Cork City side in the final, who were overwhelmingly favourites for it. They probably didn't perform in the day, and we played okay. Yeah, Dave Tilson scored a great goal to win it for us. But we built a team then again the following season, and you know, it was that mad season where the league went to a playoff. You know, we finished top of the league, but it was the only season the league wasn't finished on goal difference. so it was crazy. But we had a good squad. Eamon had built a really, really good squad. And we probably didn't achieve as much as we should have, to be honest. We were probably, we had a lot of good players, but I don't think we reached the potential that we should have with the squad of players we had.
Mm. And you were runners-up then to Cork the next season then as well. Was that, when you feel yourself that, just that close, that far away, but it just doesn't seem to happen, does it get frustrating? Do you get annoyed? Do you kind of just say, well, that's football, it's about the fine margins?
Yeah, it is. Like you say, it's small margins in games, and when you get that close, you look back and think, well, we dropped points there, we could have won, and I'm sure all the other teams do that. So you do look back and you think you're that close to getting over the line again, then it can be very, very disappointing. Finishing runners up is not the worst thing in the world, I suppose, but we felt we'd assembled a really good squad at that stage. So it was disappointing, but there was some good teams around the league as well also. So it's, like I said, it's probably, I wouldn't say it's a regret, but I think, again, when we do meet up that team that won the league, that we probably feel that we left a couple of team trophies behind us, yeah.
Mm. You make an extraordinary move, is it fair to say, to that, to Linfield in Northern Ireland. First of all, how did it come about? And second of all, why did you feel that was a move that you felt was good for you?
How did it come about? There's probably a few factors in it. I think Eamon had been sacked and I would have been close enough to him as a player and probably wasn't overly happy how it was handled. And my dad had died as well that year. And I just got to the stage where I probably thought, look, I need a change here. And we poor up had told me that Ards had come down, Roy Coyle had come down to watch me in a game. And I met Roy after the game in the which would have been the boardroom in Dalymount in them days. And I had a chat with Roy and sort of Ards wasn't something that I was overly keen on. And then I got a call from Jim Emery at Linfield. Jim would have been legendary scout at Linfield for a long, long time to see what I meet him and Trevor Anderson. And obviously, he sort of did. I went and met both of them and liked what I heard. Obviously, had a bit of trepidation about it. No point saying anything different. But as I've said before, it's probably the most enjoyment I had as a player.
Really?
In relation to playing football, was at Linfield. It was a brilliant club. They looked after me so well. It felt like a proper football club. And that, I'm not being disrespectful to the Bowers or Pats at the time, but it was that Saturday afternoon. Everything was done properly. It was just the proper, and it was huge expectation around performance and having to win. But brilliant times, absolutely brilliant times. I was just very fortunate when I went up. I'd sort of got an ankle injury playing for Bowes against Limerick down in, I think it might have been the old Rathbarn at the time. And it wouldn't go away. I couldn't shake it off for the first few weeks I was at Linfield, and I didn't play well for about 3 or 4 games. And the crowd were getting a little bit restless with me because I think they paid about $25,000. And then I played a game against Cliftonville, I think it was, and I actually forgot to bring my contact lenses with me. And I was very, very bad, I say, at that stage. But funny enough, I scored a header. And Trevor
is that what really happened, or is that the excuse you're using?
No, that's what really happened. I actually asked a friend of mine to drive up with him, and he got halfway up. Because I used, at that stage, we'd either get the train to Newry or we'd drive to Dundalk, and Linfield would pick us up there. And then Trevor took me off for about 10 minutes to go in the game. The crowd all booed. And he said, well, that's you right, because they're booing me now for taking you off. So and then it just went. We won 4 trophies in the space of about 4 months.
That's right.
So it was beat Glentoran on the last day of the season to win the league. I scored one of the goals. Desi Gorman scored the other. We won the Irish Cup. So it was a fairy tale in that regard in relation to being successful.
And I just
had great times there. Great times.
Yeah. Did it surprise you how much they took you to their heart, I suppose, like that? Because for people that don't know, Linfield would have been a predominantly Protestant club. Welcoming a guy from the south, from Dublin, would have been probably deemed a little bit odd at the time, even in the early 90s or mid-90s.
It did initially, but when you get to know the club and the supporters, basically the demand is that you give everything. It's probably like most supporters, like you give everything, doesn't matter what you are, once you're producing. Listen, it's like anything, just people always have issues, you know, that's just the way it is, nothing you can do about that. But all I had to do was make sure I performed on a weekend to the best I could. And then they gave me a new name as well. They called me Billy, so that sort of helped. like you say, at the time it wasn't a brilliant time for anybody in Northern Ireland at the time. So it was difficult. Like I said, we would travel up. I used to go up to train twice a week as well, so it wasn't as if I was training with a club down here. I'd drive to Newry or drive to Dundalk, and the kit man, big Gary Eccles, who was still there, would come down and pick me up. And at the time, probably Gary Haylock would have been coming up. Then we'd had Desi, Paul McGee, Alan Bourne. So there was a bit of bit of company there. Initially, it was me and Gary and Desi. But they just looked after us so well, you know. But it's probably hard to describe, you know. It's a football club that the bit that I really enjoyed was the demands. That's the bit I really enjoyed. The demands that you couldn't get away with having to drop off. You had to perform. Mm. And listen, you didn't always perform and they let you know about it. But I really enjoyed that bit because I think that's good for a player that you're constantly under pressure to reach the goals and play as well as you can. And then also the fact that you were always had a chance of winning trophies was big in that regard as well.
And Linfield, I mean, for their bare minimum as a club is to win trophies. That's like their baseline of the demands, isn't it? I mean, essentially they've won league titles from here to eternity, down through the years, and still do now. So the baseline is if you come here, you win trophies, and that's your bare minimum of what you need to give.
Yeah, and people think that's easy, to be able to do that, you know, consistently, like a club like Linfield can do. It's just it's bred into the players there. It's in the DNA that second's not acceptable, and rightly so. They've got a huge fan base in where they are, and they demand that their team is successful. And like I said, that's the bit I really enjoyed. And I made some, it's like most of the clubs you've been, you make some great friends as well. We had a when I went there, we had a really experienced team. We had a team of men, have to be honest, we had a team of men who could look after themselves. And it was like I said, we didn't have loads of young players. Trevor had sort of built a squad of really experienced, good players. We had a few Scottish lads, obviously a few from down south, and then the bulk of the boys from Belfast. And you're going into a dressing room that's, like you say, completely different backgrounds. So obviously there's a bit of getting used to that at the start. But the players were brilliant. They welcomed me with open arms, and I think they realised that you're there to play football, and you're willing to work as hard as they are. And you'd have had lads, I would have played lads with the likes of John Easton and Alan Dornan, who would have been blue men through and through. So just playing for Linfield was good enough for them. It wasn't about money or anything like that. It was putting on the short every Saturday was what they wanted. So you had to respect that as well. And then sometimes you can see a fella coming in the outside, probably getting paid more than he should be, big transfer fee. So like, that's all a challenge as well. I think as a player, that's the stuff you've got to embrace and enjoy. And prove that you're worthy of what the club are looking for. But like I said, it was a brilliant time, successful. And as I said, as a player, probably the one place I would say I had my best time as a player.
Fantastic. And then again, you go to opposites, which is moving to Shamrock Rovers for a season, which is the other end of the scale too. So how did that come about? And if you were at a club that you loved entirely, how did it end up that you kind of moved to Shamrock Rovers after just what, three seasons, two seasons?
Yeah, like I said, at that stage, my dad had died in September the year previous, and then I'd sort of taken over a part of his business that he had as well, and it probably the traveling and everything else just probably became, if I didn't have that, I probably would have stayed there, to be honest. And it was not a funny story, but when I was coming back, I'd actually signed for Bowles. I'd actually met Torlick and agreed and signed a contract with him. And then Rovers came in very late. And I said, I grew up sort of going to watch Rovers. So I went to Torlick and said, listen, I've made a mistake. I want to go to Rovers, which didn't go down well. But as he said to me himself, if you don't want to play for me or you don't want to play for us, well then off you go. Probably in a bit stronger words than that. Torlick is a gentleman. So I was probably, and in hindsight, it was the wrong thing to do because it didn't work out well at Rovers. But that's how it happened. It's not something that you're I suppose, I remember listening to Roy Keane talking about, given his commitment to obviously completely different level to sign for Blackburn and then deciding he signed for Manchester United. But look, it's football and these things happen. And yeah, I went to Rovers at the time and Rovers weren't in a good place, still sort of moving around grounds after moving out of Milltown. We were in Tulka Park, I think, at the stage when I played. So wasn't good. We had a poor season. We ended up down, I don't know where we finished in the end, but we were in a relegation fight for a period of time. And we had good players as well. We had a good enough squad. We didn't perform. And then I went away on holidays, and when I came back, Pat Bourne had informed me that they were going to sell me because he needed money. I'd signed a 3-year contract. I didn't want to go, but basically told me, well, you have to. We need the money. You have to go. And again, was trying to sell me to Newry town at the time, I think it was. But just said, I'm not going back up the north. And then Shells came in for me.
What's it like being told that as a player? Basically, you're sitting there. You're like, well, hold on a second. My track record's pretty good. I win titles and trophies where I go, and I want to do the same here. And then you're told, well, that's not going to happen. So, thanks for playing, and you're off to whoever wants to get you.
Yeah, I suppose. I think once you're told that you have to go, then there's probably no way back, whether you like it or not. It's difficult, isn't it? Listen, you can end up staying there and you have to do your best. But I think on the basis that it was, the club needed to get some money in. But no real option. The only option I had was deciding where I wanted to go rather than probably where they wanted me to go at the time. And I was fortunate enough that Shells had come in then once they heard that was available. And that ended up quite well. To be fair, it's probably a really good move. So again, probably the longest I spent at any club was Shelbourne. And again, brilliant success, played under great managers. So it was a good move in the end, I suppose.
And what was the I know you kind of made the argument you're playing at opposite ends of the scale in terms of moving from a team that was fighting to stay in the league and maybe stay afloat and all of these kind of things to a team that was pushing to win a league title. How do you have to change your mentality yourself when you make that kind of switch? Because it's not a dogfight down here anymore. It's winning every week up here.
No, I don't think so. I think you have a belief in what you can do as a player, and whether that's the end, the dogfight with Rovers wasn't like I was part of the reason we were down there. So it's not something you think, well, it's not down to me. It is down to you because you're part of the team. Like I said, we lost some players at Rovers at the time. We just didn't end up in a good place. But you have to believe and back yourself as well in your ability. Shells had a really good squad already, had been successful previously as well. Damien Richmond was the manager at the time, and you just back yourself. Like I said, it's, I wanted to stay in Dublin. Shells came in for me. So, obviously you're looking at that and thinking, well, again, a bit like the Linfield scenario, I'm going to a club that I know I've got a chance of winning things because they've got a really strong squad. Like I said, so you just embrace that.
And what success it was at Shells as well. When you arrived there, did you feel like you were building to something like 1990,000? Did you feel like that you were moving in that kind of direction where you were just going to win it all?
I think at that time, Shells were strong. Like I said, they'd been successful and they developed Tulka Park. So it was a really strong club at the time. It was a really good club. So you knew you're going into a squad that was capable of winning things. Probably focused you a little bit more that, you had to really get to the levels that you wanted to play in that team because they had a lot of good players, particularly in that midfield area at the time. So when you're looking at them moves, you're taking all that into account. You got a chance of being successful. This one was probably, I didn't want to move. It was probably one that, I won't say a hurt, but it disappointed me and probably gave me a little bit of a, something to prove, I suppose, is another way of looking at it. So, but I was going into a good side as well. We had put with really good players.
You suffered a really bad injury, am I right in saying that, when you first came? Did you fractured your leg?
Or? It was probably a couple of seasons into it. Damien had gone, and Darren McKeely had taken over. And I'd have got a bad injury against Rovers. Paul Whelan, who would have been a good friend of mine, he'd been the captain of that Bowes team that won the cup, was tackled on the far side, just in front of the sort of riverside stand. And I had a compound fracture and dislocation of the ankle. So the bone came through the skin. And,
oof.
And it done a lot of damage. So obviously that ended my season. And then the following season, I got myself back and got myself fit, and we ended up having a brilliant season. And probably as a player, it was probably the best season I've had in relation to playing. I won the Players' Player of the Year. I won the Soccer Personality of the Year. So it was a good, really good season. But it did take a lot out of me, I have to be honest, to get myself back to the level I wanted to be at. Physio at the time, Larry Bourne, who went out his way. I was very determined to get myself fit quickly. I was back playing in 6 months, which was quick for the injury I had.
Again,
it's one of them things. Like I said, you're always learning in football and to deal with something like that. The couple of injuries I had before that were minor breaks. There wasn't anything serious in them, but that was really serious one. And but I got myself fit, and I got myself fitter and better than I was previously. And like I said, we had a brilliant season the following year.
And how do you kind of get yourself back into that kind of, because it could have been so easily to kind of maybe just go, this is my career right here with an injury like that. So how do you, and as well as a footballer, you kind of want to be active, you want to be doing stuff, you want to be part of it, etc. And all of a sudden, you can't even walk properly, you know, all of these types of things. So mentally, where were you, and how did you pull yourself back to go on and get back again?
I think there's a few different processes in that. I remember waking up the following morning in the Mater Hospital, because I wasn't aware of what had happened, obviously.
Oh, really?
I sort of had an idea. Obviously, the pain gave me an idea that this was serious. I remember Greg Costello coming in the ambulance with me to the hospital. Greg wasn't playing at the time, he was injured. And only after, I remember telling me that my nail marks were in his hand for about a week after from gripping him. I remember getting to the hospital, and I remember the chairman, Gary Brown was the chairman at the time, coming in and making sure. I think he rang, they got a surgeon in, said, listen, this is a footballer, this needs to be looked at properly. So I'm waking up the next morning with my leg, I think it was in a half cast and like plenty of stitches and everything else. Cause like I said, I'd dislocate and fractured it. So it broke through the skin on one side, and I had to go in the other side to sort of pin it together. So I remember thinking at that time, look, I'm done, I'm finished, I'm not going to play again. So I had that emotion, and in fairness, the doctor said to me, listen, the operation went well, everything was fine. But it's a long road back, and you mightn't get to where you were. So probably that was a nice way of telling me probably won't happen. So that, I suppose, that desperation, or that might be it. We soon put that aside and say, right, the determination comes in and say, well, I'll get back to where I want to be. And like I said, through brilliant help with Larry, Larry Bowen was brilliant with me, because I used to drive him mad. I'd be ringing him, going down to Port Marnock Beach and walking on the dunes and walking in the water and everything else from, so away from training Michelle. So it was it was a difficult time initially, but once you start to make that progress, and I was fortunate, fortunate is the wrong word. I'd broke my leg playing for Ireland under 21s in the Toulon tournament against Senegal in the first game of the tournament. And I played on for about 20 minutes. We'd no physio with us at the time, believe it or not. Ireland under 21s, we'd no physio. Morris Setters was the manager. We'd have been around Jack Charrington's time as well. I was playing for Pats at the time. And then I recovered from that in the first game back for Pats reserves. I broke it again in a different place. So it sort of had that in my head, and I knew you can get over this. So just, you know, and it's much worse, but obviously just get on with it and get yourself working and get yourself stronger than you've been. And listen, there's loads of support services around you as well that, that you rely on to get yourself back to a level where you need it to be.
Mm. The next season after that, the incredible double winning season, you, like, talk to us about that season in particular, and also your own kind of role in that as well. You've come back from a really, really serious injury, and now you need to be part of a team that's essentially trying to be relentless. How did that go, and how did you kind of, did you have to fit your way back into the team? Did you have to, how did it work?
Yeah, I think so. Like, my goal was to be ready for the start of the season. I can't remember whether I played the first game or maybe the second or third game. I think it might have been, it might have been Kilkenny City, I'm not sure. But my goal at that time was just to get back playing. And then once I knew I was back to the level I wanted to be, was you sort of had something in your head to say, well, this can be taken away from you fairly quickly, so make sure you take as much as you can when you can. But like, that team at the time was a serious side. Like, we'd some top players, League of Ireland players at the time. We had a really good manager in Dermot as well. He was, again, we go back to managers, Dermot was tactically so aware as well. Like, people probably don't give him the credit he deserves, and that he knew the game inside out. Was a good manager as well. People might have looked at him and thought he was, you know, he was gruff and rough, and he was that as well, but he was tactically really, really strong, knew how to get the best out of players, didn't suffer fouls, wanted people to work and wanted to be successful. You have to think where Dermot's coming from in his Rovers days, even Glen Torren, success, you know, Dundalk in his early days. So he wanted to win. He was about winning. He wasn't there just to make up the numbers or be a manager. He wanted to win things. And that probably the way I was as well. And we fell out once or twice, to be fair. You know, but again, he would won a huge respect for in how he managed love playing from. Because he simplified the game for me, Jeremy. He simplified it, and you knew what your role was within his team.
And you were just really good that season. I mean, you won the league by, what, 10 points, 11 points, something like that. So it was a team that just kept on going for throughout the whole season. How do you kind of keep doing that? Like, how do you keep going back to the well week in, week out as a player and as a team as well, for a team that you know is in this kind of purple patch?
Yeah, I think you go back to the whole, what I said, the manager is driven. I think we had a group of players, if you think of some of the players in that team, that were driven, that were winners, that winning was, I suppose, second nature to them. So you didn't think of anything else. It wasn't that we set to ourselves relentless, just going, you know, we knew we could go and win football matches. We knew we had teams that could dig out results, whether we played well or we didn't. And we had a lot of good senior lads around at the time. So it's hard to describe. It's like, I suppose, like losing as well. You can get into a rut. We just got into a belief that, you know, we're capable of beating anybody here. And if we didn't, if we knew we had a day where weren't playing well, we'd a few people off it, well, then we very rarely lost. You know, and that's obviously, again, Dermot had that sort of in his psyche as well, that if you don't win, make sure you don't lose the game. Simple as that. And then we'll move to the next day.
FAI Cup final against, who was that against again?
Well, yeah. it wasn't the best cup final ever. It was a first one in Talca. It was a lovely sunny day, big crowd, terrible game, really poor game. And the second one probably wasn't that much better, as cup finals normally are. But fortunately enough, we won the cup and won a double. So it was, it was brilliant. It was, like I said, it was, I think it was, I remember talking to Paul Doolan after, and we were saying, look, it's a double. I'd won a double at Linfield, but he'd won, I think, about six of them at that stage. he was well used to it. But yeah, it was a great day when you, like, I've been fortunate enough to win a few doubles. And they're brilliant, brilliant achievements. Because be able to go a whole season in the league and be able to do that, and because you can take your eye off the ball a little bit in cup competitions, if you're really at the top end and you're fighting for league titles, then you can have that little bit of, I won't say you purposely do it, but it can happen. So it is special to be able to go and win the cups and leagues together. Yeah.
Yeah. You miss out on the league title then the next season to Shamrock Rovers. You had obviously won the title of the league before, but you had come from Shamrock Rovers. Was there any kind of like, oh, that could have been me? Or did you kind of go, well, I won the league title and it's fair enough?
Yeah. Like I said, the Rovers weren't disappointed in how it was handled, more so than anything. But like I said, it's fuel for getting you going again. Like, so like you just have to use these things in football. It's the way it was, and I'd made a good move to another good club. So people that win league titles deserve them. It's not anything to do with anything else. It's over a long course of the season. And if you win one, well, then you deserve to win it, you know.
And you did win it again the next season against Shamrock Rovers, in terms of the table as well. Slightly closer and fair, 5 or 6 points the difference. What was that season like again? Because it's obviously a much tighter affair, a little bit nip and tuck as the kind of season goes on, and then obviously you make the break for it in the end. But how was that season for you and for winning the league again?
Yeah, I think with a lot of these, like, people ask me about, you know, games and leagues and, you know, years and seasons. And like, when you've been in it as long as I have, they sort of, obviously be blasé about it. They don't blend into each other, but you don't, I suppose I just get into a mentality at that stage about winning. You know, I just wanted to win. It's that's what it was. And I knew after the season when I got injured that I was probably not going to play as long as I would have played if I hadn't got the injury. To be honest, I was starting to feel the effects of it a little bit. So I suppose anything at that stage was really focused on playing as much as you could and as many games as you could, and obviously winning as much as you could. Because like I said, Ashiel's team was a special side, so I was fortunate enough to be able to go into a really good side, and then obviously fortunate enough to manage a really good side. So, but you don't, like, I never really got into, I just got into a zone of going to be competitive and to win. I suppose that's the way I was as a player, you know.
You decided to move into management then a couple of years later. What?
I wouldn't say I decided.
So how did that come about? Were they looking for a savior? Is that what it was?
Dermot had gone, and Ollie Bourne and Finbar Flood rang me one Saturday and asked me to go down and meet them in the club. I was obviously still registered as a player at the time, and I went down, and it was the season from the transfer from winter to summer, so it was a short season. And asked me would I take the job, which is a bit surprising, to be honest. I was 32 at the time. But like I said, I knew I was probably coming to the end of the playing career as such, even though I was young. The injury I had was serious, and I just felt it caught me a little bit. I don't think I was as good as I was previously. I think that season after, I had a really good season, but then the following two seasons, I sort of felt I wasn't contributing as much as I probably was previously. They offered me the job. Obviously said, let me have a think about it. So again, then had a think, but went, met them and said, yeah, listen, it's something I'd like to do. And then you had to weigh it all up. This was a group of players that I was pals with. I was the player. And then the next day I was the manager. So I decided to try playing and manage. And that lasted about 3 games. I think I got sent off an inch of guard against Pat. And that was the last game I played. I said, that's it. I can't do this anymore. I only brought myself on. I got sent off. So I stopped playing then. And then, obviously, since then, I've been involved in the other side of the game. So it sort of came out of blue. It wasn't that. I was, there was no talk of it or anything. That was never, listen, one day you'll be the manager here. It was just Dermot had gone, and Ollie and Finbar probably thought, let's try a different route, and it's a short season. And I took a bit of a gamble because they only gave me a 6-month contract. They were very kind. And I had a 12-month contract as a player. And it didn't start well. We had a really poor start. Really poor start. We got knocked out of Europe very early by Hibs and Malta. We got knocked out of the FAI Cup early. And we had a poor start in the league. And I think at that stage, people are probably saying, wrong decision, need to make a change. And then we just hit a bit of form. We nearly got Bowes, Stephen Kenny's team. They went on to win the league, but we were a good bit behind, and we had a really good run. And then they beat us in Tolka about 2 or 3 games ago, I think. But we did nearly catch them. And I suppose it was a great learning curve from him. Poor season.
You mentioned a number of times that you played under great managers as well, managers that you really had a lot of respect for. Did you pull in that information as well that you'd learned from them, and I suppose their ability to get players motivated or to be a tactician, etc. Did you pull inspiration from there?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at all the managers that I said I was fortunate to play under. I played under a lot of good managers. But I think it's also important you're your own man, because you can't try and morph into somebody else. You've got to be. You can take points from certain people. I would have looked at Brian and thought, is the attention to detail just didn't happen. He had to work at that, and he had to work tremendously hard when he probably had no real support. So I became really engrossed in it. I became infatuated by it, to be honest. I was probably hard to live with. I'd say it was difficult as well for the people in the club, because I became just obsessive with being really good manager. That's what I wanted to be. And then there's other aspects of it, man management and dealing with players and motivating players tactically. The one thing I always felt as a manager at the time was to make sure you bring really good people in around you that know more in certain aspects of the game than you do. And that's what I did. I had great staff around me. The first, when I came in, I brought Johnny McDonald in with me. I would have played with Johnny at Pats, and Johnny came in as assistant manager. I brought Dave Henderson in, who I would have played with Pats, and Hendo's been with me ever since. I had good people, Fred Davis, who had been around Shells, who knew the club, who knew it well. Like I said, all the backroom staff. So I've always, and even when Johnny left during that season, he'd got an opportunity to go with Jerry Smith to the, I think it was the World Youth Cup, was it in Qatar, or can't remember where it was, but which was a bit of a blow. But I remember meeting Ollie Bourne a few days before Johnny was gone, and he said to me, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to bring Eamon Collins in. And he said, what? Because me and Eamon would have been loggerheads when he was at Pats and I was at Shells. So I think you're always looking to bring, I would have always looked to bring people in that will challenge as well, and that will have real good attributes, maybe around some of the ones you don't have. Johnny was a brilliant coach. Johnny McDonald was a really, really good coach. Dave Henderson was someone who would give you the opinion, not that you wanted to hear, but the one that he felt, was right. And then even people around the club, the likes of Mick Neville was around the club at the time, who's one of the most decorated footballers in the League of Ireland, brilliant player, great, great fella. And Mick was sort of running the academy at the same time as well. So he was still playing when I went there as a player. So good people around me, really good people around me. And then
I had Ollie. Teamwork on and off the pitch, isn't it?
And I had Ollie behind me. Ollie wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but he was certainly everyone's cup of tea at Shells. Because that's all it was for Ollie, was Shelbourne. So we had some interesting times with Ollie. It was unbelievable. It was brilliant. It was like I said, if you ever get a chance to write a book, there's definitely a story in the I think I spent nearly 10 years at Shell, so there's definitely a story in that. Absolutely. It was brilliant.
Absolutely. You win the league title as a manager 2003, 2004 and 2006, am I right in saying that? In that case, you had so tremendous success, really great success. What happens with the move to Derry then? How does that formulate? And I suppose...
Yeah, well, obviously the Shell thing happened, and obviously it was really disappointing. We'd a brilliant squad and a lot of good people around the place, and it was hard. I have to be honest, the last year was really hard because we'd and it just shows a special group of players. We had a situation where, you know, staff members hadn't been paid for about 10 or 12 weeks. Players hadn't been paid for 5, 6, 7 weeks and still went on to win a league title. So they deserve huge credit for that. And it just crashed in the end, unfortunately. And the Derry job was a bit different because I turned them down about 3 times. And I normally go feeling that's normally something I go with.
So they really wanted
Jim Roddy. Jim Roddy was persistent, yeah. I'm not sure in the end they were happy about it, but but they were persistent, and yeah, it's probably the one blip. I went to Derry, I lasted 6 months, I signed a 3-year contract. It wasn't working. And that was probably my fault more so than anybody else. So I just went to Jim and said, listen, this is not working. I need to go, and you need to go and get yourself a manager.
What did you feel wasn't working?
I don't know. At the time, I enjoyed it. It's a really good club. Brilliant supporters. Squad was decent. We're short on one or two key areas, but nothing you couldn't turn around. It didn't feel right at the time before I took it, and in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have went back on what my gut feeling was. But like I said, in football, these are all learning things. These are things you pick up, and like I said, I just went to Jim and the board and said, look, this is not working out. You need to go and get someone else to go and do the job.
Which is
disappointing because you're giving people a commitment. You never like doing that, but I felt it was the right thing to do at the time.
Is that just, I suppose, the nature of the game, both as a player and a manager as well, in terms of like, it's a puzzle, and you've got to be the piece that fits in. Otherwise, it's just not working.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's loads of different parts and bits to it. You know, and in fairness, Stephen had been there previously and they'd been really successful to a point. And Derry's a big club as well with a big expectation from their fan base, and rightly so. But it just didn't feel right. It wasn't something I could put my finger on, say it was this, it was that. It was just, like I said, my gut feeling at the start was it wasn't the right move, which probably proved. And maybe that was in my head at the time and never get out of it. But look, it's like I said, it's not everything you do in the game can be successful. But like I said, at the very start, there's been some brilliant points and there's been really some low ones, and that was a low one.
Your managerial career brings you back to Bowes. How did you come back to Bowes, and what on earth happened? Because talk about turning things around. it was quite the dramatic difference when you went to Bowes.
Yeah, in fairness, when I got to Bowes, they had a really good squad. Sean O'Connor had been there as a manager, and he had assembled a really good squad. Bowes, at the time, you know, had good financial backing. And like I said, there was a really, really good squad there. And then I probably added some important parts to that, i.e. the likes of Jason Bourne and that, as who were, you know, goal scorers, proven goal scorers. So, and some key players, quality players as well. Yeah, there was a good squad there. Brian Murphy is there, and it's a funny story, but I probably haven't told it before. I'd actually signed, and one of the issues we had at Derry was goalkeeper. And I signed Brian for Derry, And a bit like my story with Rovers and Bowes, his agent came to me and said, listen, Bowes have made him a massive offer and he wants to go there now. And probably me learning a bit off Torley, I said, well, if you don't, not that you don't apply, if that's where your heart is, well, then there's no point in you being here. So in hindsight, should have dug my heels in because he was probably the best goalkeeper I've seen in the League of Ireland, to be honest. So like I said, I inherited a really good squad. I added some quality to it at the time. And again, a bit like the Shells squad I had that I managed. Very little managing in both of them squads, to be honest. You probably had to just dampen it down sometimes in training because they were so competitive. But good players. Really, really good players.
Indeed, good enough to win it by 19 points in the league. Did you, like, when you win that well, it must be incredible. How ecstatic do you feel when you not only do you win the league, but you smash everything and everyone around you to win it?
Yeah, it's funny because that Bowes team was a really good side. I think we only conceded, I might be wrong, I think it was about 14, 15 goals in the whole season. And we scored a handful of goals. And probably the criticism of that team was we didn't play in football, believe it or not. And it was, again, a team that won a double. Like I said, scored goals for fun. Brilliant players. Like, if you think of some of the players around that team, the likes of Killian Brennan, Colonis that we got from Joseph Ndo. And I'm only sort of naming a few, but then you had the Paul Keegans, the Gary Deegans, Glenn Cronins, that other side of it. And then probably the best captain that I've worked with in the league, and on Heardy at Shelbourne and Bowes. It was a proper leader. So really good squad. And in fairness to Sean, he probably signed the bulk of them. And I was fortunate enough, I was able to gel them and manage them together to make them successful.
Yeah, I just looked it up there. You only conceded 13 goals that season, which is a phenomenal defensive record.
Yeah, it's incredible. When you think about it, like 13 goals in a whole season is
amazing.
Yeah, and that's like I said, Brian Murphy was top goalkeeper. And we'd very, very good defenders around the club then as well. So well, your success for me has always been built if you're strong, solid defensively, then you've got a real chance of winning things. But there was if you think of the forwards, you know, Glenn Crowe, Jason Bourne, Neil Fenn, difficult to leave forwards out. In them days, we could play two up front, or we did, so it was a little bit easier. But Jason and Glenn were out-and-out goal scorers, where Fenny was a brilliant player, you know, awareness, force touch, game intelligence. So we had a great blend of players.
You win the league again, you pip Shamrock Rovers by 4 points or so. Is your time at Bohemians what sets you up or gets the attention of Hibs in Scotland?
Yeah, well, probably the year previous, I'd had a chance to go to Dundee United. I went over to Dundee United, met the club, sort of agreed everything, and then Bowes couldn't agree compensation with them. So that fell through, which was a bit disappointing. And then Hibs actually approached me previous to when I got the job. And again, they went, to get the job to Colin Calderwood. And then obviously the Hibs job became available then after that. So, I suppose the success, I suppose, gives you a chance, and people looking around and see some managers around that can come in and do a job for you.
Well, that's interesting because you mentioned a couple of times, like, look, if you don't feel like your heart is here, then it's kind of best to move on. How did you feel after you had the opportunity for Dundee? You kind of felt, this might be good. That's gone. So you have to keep going. So how did you keep going? Was it easy for you? Did you just go, an opportunity? Or did you kind of look and go, hold on a second, you know, this is my career here too?
Yeah, of course you do. You have a little bit of resentment in that regard. But also then you have to have a little bit of loyalty. Bowes at the time were going through really tough spell. Financially, it wasn't in a great place. We had brought in a lot of good young players, the likes of Roberto Lopez, players that are still around the league, and Keith Buckley, you know, Chris Forrester.
Mm.
So we brought them all in as kids, Matt Doherty, all very, very young boys. And it did brilliant for us, absolutely brilliant for us. You know, Paddy Madden. So that was a really interesting season because we hadn't got anything then. We'd been sort of, we were doing a gym walk in the stand in Daly Mount, running up old school up and down steps and lifting weights. And so it was a bit like going back to Brian's time at Pat's, trying to bond a group of players, a young group of players with some senior ones as well. So I had a bit of responsibility as well there, that I'd had the good times, I suppose. And okay, well then, you know, it didn't happen, and it didn't happen for a reason, whatever reason that was, it was. And just get on with it then. And like I said, we had a really good young team, but they were very, very young. And they acquitted themselves quite well in the league. And then obviously we went and played Hibs in a friendly actually over there. And then they approached us about a game because I think they had a few call-offs with weather, and we went and played them at Easter Road. And then obviously the Hibs job came up again, and they touched base with me.
What's it like taking a job like Hibs, because you're going into a league that is essentially clearly dominated by two teams. So is essentially the best thing that you can hope for is third place and a cup? Is that basically how it is? Where do you place yourself when you go, right, what are my goals here?
I think the circumstances obviously are different. When Hibs approached me, they were 11th out of 12th in the Scottish Premier League. Dunfermline were below us. And the goal at that time was make sure we stay up. We went to Dunfermline and won, and then we ended up beating Dunfermline in a midweek game at Easter Road. I think it was about 18,000 at it. It was a big game. And we were training it up very, very early. So that was a brilliant night. And the goal was obviously make sure we stay in the Premier Division, which we achieved. And like, I'm not saying that was an achievement, because Hibs shouldn't be in that position, but we were. So the goal was to stay up. And then probably we get to a Scottish Cup final, in hindsight, was a disaster because we got beaten by Hearts and got beaten well. But I had a great run to the cup final, a brilliant semi-final against Aberdeen and Hampden. So I suppose you're looking at that, and you know, it was a financial reward as well to reaching the Scottish Cup final.
Mm.
So you reach your goal and what the club have asked you to do to make sure we stay in the SPL. But then you lose a cup final to your biggest rivals heavily. That's very disappointing. Like I said before, it's football, and you've got to bounce back. And then the following season was again we reach another Scottish Cup final, and lose to Celtic this time. So I've been fortunate enough. The only Scottish Cup matches I lost as a manager were two cup finals, and again a brilliant semi final against Falkirk where we were 3-0. He won down at half time. Falkirk were a first championship club at the time. A lot of Hibs fans left the stadium. And again, this is probably where I'm saying about your career has real ups and real downs. This was 90 minutes of your career, because at half-time, you were probably going out the door. And then at the end, you were a hero. So it's probably some football up. But that was a brilliant occasion, even though it wasn't good at halftime. It was just a brilliant occasion to be involved in that. Owen Doyle would have played a big part in that semi-final as well. So, it was another fantastic club. I've been very lucky, the clubs that I've managed and even played for in my career. That, like Hibs is a special club as well. And I was fortunate. I went over to see them win the Scottish Cup against Rangers when they did eventually get over the line.
Oh, brilliant!
That was a brilliant day. But it like And this is where you're always looking to strive, where, and it's difficult to tell people, to managing an SPL team, to managing a League of Ireland team is night and day. From where I was at the time with Bows or Shells, that you're basically doing everything. When I went to Hibs, I had everything going for me. All I had to manage was the team and concentrate on getting the team ready to play at the weekend. And that was the hardest decision that I've probably ever had to make in football, was to decide to leave Hibs. We were going okay. We were fifth in the league at the time. We'd lost to Hearts in a semi-final of a League Cup at Easter, or the quarter-final maybe. We played really well. We got beaten by Aberdeen on the Saturday at home. And then we played Hearts. I don't know, it might have been quarter-final, actually, a League Cup at Easter Road. And we'd actually played really well against them. They beat us 1-0. And I just felt after the game it was probably time for someone else to come in. And what I didn't want to happen was, because I'd really enjoyed my time there. Like I said, brilliant club, great people, great support. And I felt where we were fifth in the league. I thought, right, well, maybe it's time for someone else to have a crack, but not leave them where I took it over. But unfortunately, it went the other way when I did go.
Did the two cup finals maybe go against you from that point of view, because people had an expectation that you were supposed to be, you're reaching cup finals, but you're not doing it in the league. So, yeah. So there's night and day kind of chalk and cheese happening there.
Oh, I think so. I think the first one is different because we were struggling badly in the league. Second one, I think we finished seventh in the league that year. We just missed out in the top six, which is disappointing. We actually ended up on more points in the bottom six than some of the teams in the top six. But the cup final, the second cup final, obviously, if you come up against the Celtic or Rangers in the cup final, you're always up against it. Mm. The first cup final, obviously, getting to the cup final was a big achievement because we were second last in the league for a long period of the league. But obviously, then you lose to your biggest rivals, then it's difficult for everybody to take. And that's probably the lowest point I've ever had in football, to be honest. That night is probably the lowest I've ever felt in general. To be honest, in football, it wasn't good. And you have to hold your hands up as a manager and say you got wrong and that's your fault. You take the blame for it, but it's not nice no matter what people think. But to get back the next year, again it was peculiar because we ended up playing Aberdeen, Kilmarnock, I think, in both runs in both cup competitions. In the 2 years. And like I said, we the year after we lost the Hearts in the final, we drew them the first round. The following season, we drew them the first round again at Easter Road. And I was serving the ban because I got sent off in the Scottish Cup final. And we beat them 1-0 at Easter Road, which was brilliant. Great occasion as well. But it didn't make up for losing the final, obviously. Mm. But then we got to the final again. But like I said, when you come up against the Celtic or Rangers in cup finals, it's difficult, even semi-finals, because just historically and what they have, you know, their expectancy. We played okay in the second cup final. Celtic beat us well. They beat us 3-0 and were a much better team than us at the time. But it's never nice losing cup finals. But it was a brilliant occasion from my end. It was to lead Hibs out in the Scottish Cup final against Celtic was brilliant.
So you take the team from pretty much, you keep them in the league, essentially that was your goal that when you first arrived, etc. It goes relatively okay. So what happens for you to kind of go, okay, I'm done here at Hibs. I've kind of had enough of this.
Yeah, I've had enough. I just thought at the time it was starting to maybe go the other way. And like I said, I looked at it. I remember speaking to Jimmy Nicol because Jimmy had come in with me as assistant manager, and I spoke to him in the training ground. And I said to him, listen, I'm going to step away from this. And he's saying, you're mad. Like, we're fifth in the league. Things are going well. But I just had a feeling that it wasn't going as well as I would have liked it, and how I managed and what I seen. And I just thought at the time, well, if it's going to go that way, I'd rather someone come in and try, you know, take it from where it was, and you're in a good position. You're not under pressure to be in a relegation battle like I was when I went in. So we hadn't played a Scottish Cup match, so we're still in the Scottish Cup for that season. I went, It's like anything. It's go back to the dairy job. It's gut feeling. It's what you feel as a person, that, and that was my gut feeling at the time. What in hindsight was the right thing? Probably not, because Hibs ended up getting relegated. Terry Butcher came in, and obviously, like I said, we were fifth. The week I left, I think we played Motherwell, and Jimmy took the team that week. And I remember meeting the chairman, who was Rod Petrie, was the chairman. He was brilliant to me. Workaholic, demanding, ran a really tight ship. He didn't want me to go, but I just felt, look, I said, this is the right time. I think the club is not in a bad place at the moment, and I don't want to be ending up where we were when I came in. But like you said, that was my decision. It wasn't anyone else's, and I just felt it was the right thing to do.
I know we're pressed for time, so I just want to run on quickly about with Shamrock Rovers as well. Your time there. How did you feel that went, and where did you feel like you had brought the club in that time period?
I think I enjoyed the Rovers job. I think at the time we were sort of where we were as a club. We're in the pecking order, was probably where we finished the few seasons I was there. But the expectancy at Rovers is obviously a lot more than that. You know, you had a really strong Dundalk team, a really strong Cork team. You know, so Rovers was like I said, the expectancy is more than being Tour de Fort. And we'd got to Europe the seasons I was there. So from my end of it, I felt that's probably as far as we could go. People probably don't believe that, and that's fine, but that's where I thought where we should be. But like I said, it's there's big expectancy at Rovers. You know, really, so a bit like Linfield, they used to winning things. So, but I just thought at the time there was where we were was where I felt we could take the team to. I think at the time, like I said, Dundalk had assembled a really, really good squad, and John Caulfield obviously doing a brilliant job at Cork as well. So, but look, I'm not saying that he accepted that, I accepted that, but I felt that's where we were. There was a lot of investment, you know, around the youth end of it, Rovers, and that was the road they wanted to go. Like I said, I've been very fortunate to manage most of the big clubs in Ireland, and I suppose that was another one. And I really enjoyed my time there, good people there. And in fairness, all the staff that are still there probably came in while I was there. So maybe I had a good eye for recruitment, I don't know. But and they've had huge success, obviously, as well. So, but it was a trying time as well. At times, at the end, it was how it ended was disappointing. But look, it's football, you know. Like you move on as such. That's the way things are.
Absolutely.
But again, like I said, I totally enjoyed my time there.
I wanted to talk to you about the being director of football as well at Bowes. Where you are now, how different is that to being a playing and a manager? Because I'd imagine you have to kind of have eyeballs on almost every aspect of the club and everything that's going on.
Yeah. Look, it's completely different. I was fortunate enough that I went to Waterford for a year with Lee Power and sort of director of football role there. When they in the fourth division got them up into the Premier Division, and then I had 4 years at Linfield as a general manager. So I'd seen a lot of the other side of the game, where I had probably, when I was playing and managing, you're engrossed in the football side of it, and how all that matters is results and everything else. So in the role I'm in now, like you said, it's a broad brush of everything in the club from a football point of view, from our small side of games teams to our academy teams, our women's academy teams, our women's senior teams, the men's senior teams, the development centre, the Oscar Traynor Road. It's huge. It's there's so much involved in it, but it's brilliant as well. It's like obviously it's disappointing at the moment where we are. We know that, but the potential of the club is massive. You know, we're in a good place to a point. Obviously the football end of it, we need to rectify and get that right. But the potential of the club, the structure and how it's building behind the scenes. And I know outside people don't, you know, they look at results, and I get that. I totally understand that. I've been around the game long enough to know that that's what only people matter. But there's so much going on in the background that the club will be in a really, really good position. And then if obviously with the purchase of our own training ground, the development, the Daily Mount, and everything that's going on around the club outside of, you know, I won't say the football side of it, but trying to build a club and build a brand and make sure that we're, you know, we have to depend on all them things to keep the club going and be successful over a period of time. And that's all building well. So, but like I said, the potential there is huge. But we also know that, you know, the pitch is where it matters. Senior team is where it matters.
And how important and is that?
We've got that.
Sorry, go on.
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how important is that balance? Because, and I say this, by the way, with only anecdotal evidence, et cetera, and stuff that I've read, but relatively, you're financially good as a club or okay, et cetera. And, you know, people are kind of looking at it where there's that side of it that's going really well, and it's not necessarily going that well on the pitch. And getting the balance right of, I suppose, not being tempted to do what other clubs have done before, which is essentially to buy your way into the stratosphere and make sure that the longevity of the club is there rather than the kind of the short-term games of what we've seen has happened to other clubs around us.
Yeah, listen, I think you got to be conscious as well of like supporters. Like I said, and I totally understand it, like at the end of the day, Friday night is what matters for supporters. So you have to be respectful of that. Bose is a little bit different on the basis of the members club. So like you say, the longevity, the plan and the structure of the club going forward is vitally important. We're going to have a period of time where we're not going to be in Daily Mount. So that has to be taken into account. But in saying that, we should be more competitive than we are. Absolutely no excuses for that. So like I said, it's trying to balance. You're right, there is a lot of balance to that, and there's so many things going on, but we've got to make sure that we are competitive on the pitch. It's as simple as that. Bowes is a big club, you know. To think the last time they won a trophy I was there is a little bit difficult to take, to be honest. And fully aware of the expectations. I spoke about Rovers and I spoke about Linfield. It's no different than Daily Mount. It's exactly the same, because the expectation of the supporters is rightly so that we should be competitive. I think Bowes fans will know that, you know, they don't expect us to be winning leagues every year or cups every year, but they expect us to be competitive and to be getting some sort of trophy in the door on a regular basis.
And that's
part of what it is. That's the other stuff. We've got to manage that as well in the background, and we're doing that, and we're doing that well. So like you say, it's getting the balance and the structure of the club right, but also not neglecting what really the club is about, is winning football matches. And we're not doing that enough at the moment. And that's something that, you know, we have to rectify, and we're working hard. You know, so I've been in positions like that before where things are tough, and you just gotta roll your sleeves up and keep working on it and believe what you're doing.
That being said, I mean, you're still selling out games. There's so many people coming. There's this huge appetite now, not just at Bowes, but across the League of Ireland, where people seem to be so hungry for League of Ireland. It's almost as if people have woken up and went, oh, hold on a second, there's there's professional football on our doorsteps. So that being said about, you know, trophies and performances, etc., that over the past number of years and at the moment, they're still turning up. So there's a real connection at Bowes, isn't there, with the fans and the club, and I suppose the belief and the understanding that the history of Bohemians football has provided for over 100 years now.
Yeah, and it's like I said, there's not many clubs like Bowes left in Ireland, maybe Sligo, and you know, so it's but still, like I said, it's the expectancy and the size of the club demands that we are competitive. End of story. It's not like, and that's where we've got to be. Like I said, we've got to manage everything else outside of that, because we know there's changes coming, and that period of time, with Daly Mount and all that, and that's got to be managed. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background, like I say, go back, that the structure in the club is quite good behind the scenes. But like, you have to also understand, if you're a football fan, and I'm a football fan, I won't name the club I'm a fan of, but you know, I might get into trouble at Linfield. But like, I like, at the end of the day, as you as a football fan, you want to see your team winning. That's all that really matters. And I've got to try manage that, and then obviously know that there's a lot of other stuff that needs to be done. But you also have to be mindful and respectful that people go watch the game, they want to see their team winning. And we've got to get back to that. I've been at Bowes as a player and as a manager when it's been successful, and it's brilliant. It's like you say, we won a double at Bowes and back-to-back league titles, and we probably weren't getting half the crowds that we're getting at the moment. So it's incredible. If we could start winning trophies, then I'd like to see the queues that are looking to get into Daly Mount. Maybe the 8,000 stadium might be big enough if we do get back to them days, which we will. You know, we will get everybody, you know, everybody has turns on football. That's the way football works. But we've got to be, you know, we've got to be better than we are at the moment. There's no getting away from that.
Well, if history has taught us anything, Pat, it's that wherever you go, somewhere along the line, there's success that follows and comes along. So I know I've taken up probably too much of your time today, but it's been a fascinating journey. Wonderful to talk to you. Really appreciate you coming on.
Can I just say that? There's so many people involved in where I've been, you know, both as a player, as a manager, or whatever the case may be. And even now where I am at Bowes, that work in the background, there's a huge amount of work. All that is, you know, people look at managers, the success they have, but it can be on the base of what you have and what you build behind the scenes. It's massively important, you know, that you have that background and that behind you. So, you know, that's what you've got to build. And that's when it becomes even more enjoyable. And when you see other people, I go back to Shells, winning things at Shells, the biggest enjoyment I got out of that was being able to go and sit the trophy on Ollie Bourne's table and say, right, there you go. Because it meant a lot more to him than it did to me. I don't mean that in a blasé way, but it did, because I knew that was his life. And that's where I have to connect myself with supporters on a Friday night, to see that, the frustration, and that's what matters to them. And that's where we've got to get back to as a club.
Fantastic. Pat, really, really appreciate you coming on. Really enjoyed the chat. I reserve the right to get the invitation to the title celebrations whenever they whenever they happen. No pressure. Listen, thanks very much. Really appreciate it. And best of luck in everything that you do at Bowes. And of course, everybody in the background as well. No club survives without other people in the background. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share it across your social platforms to support the show. You can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to us on, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, or YouTube Podcast, and more. You can find us there. And don't forget to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our heritage. It's our game.